From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
And welcome to the Disc Golf News for the week of May 31st, 2004. I'm Brian Sullivan. Hope your holiday weekend was good and many rounds of disc golf were thrown by you and your loved ones. Coming up this time, results from Fort Morgan, Colorado, and the High Plains Challenge. Plus, we'll talk with Rick Rothstein about this weekend's upcoming Kansas City Wide Open. David Feldberg will introduce us to the concepts of push putting versus spin putting in the 60-second clinic. And we'll have a discussion with PDGA Executive Director Brian Honegger on where the PDGA has been and where it's headed. It's PDGA Radio News, and it's sponsored each and every week by Discovering the World. You can discover them at dtworld.com. You'll find a full selection, and I'm sure you'll enjoy what you find.
Disc golfing should be inexpensive and fun. Discovering the World wants nothing more than to help you have fun. They offer a wide variety of disc golf and PDGA products. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Orders ship within 24 hours, and there's a retail location open 7 days a week to deal with you personally. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com to see the full selection available now from Discovering the World.
The big dogs were in Fort Morgan, Colorado last weekend for the High Plains Challenge. Results right now, beginning with the Masters Division, where John Schiller of Fort Collins was all tied up with Jay Burkhardt going into the final nine. Schiller leaves him in the dust, wins this one by four. Burkhardt takes second place, Scott Holter third in the Masters. Now to the Women's Division, and will they ever invite Juliana Corvett back to this event after she just whoops them good? She wins by 26 over Nadine Cosgrove of Breckenridge. Peggy Berry takes third in the Women's Division. To the Open Division, where Mike Randolph could be a multiple world champ if he'd ever play more than three rounds a year. He wins this one by two over very experienced player Sean Sinclair. Daryl Nodlin takes third. It was windy, but exciting, according to tournament director John Bird.
Considering the conditions and how windy it was, having to do some overwater shots, everybody assumed that they would, you know, play safe, and they all gunned for it. Three out of the four parked it. The gallery was just going crazy.
Time now for the 60-second clinic. So which are you, a push putter or a spin putter? If you're not sure, you're about to figure it out as professional disc golfer David Feldberg introduces us to the concepts of push putting and spin putting.
Basically, there's two kinds of putting in disc golf. There's one putt where you are throwing it and you break your wrist to the right and spin it towards the basket. Or there's another putt which you hold it in any angle and you hold it and push it forward without breaking your wrist open to the right. Those are the two kinds of putts. So let's talk about the advantages of a spin putt. A spin putt gets its advantage when you're in a low ceiling situation. Sometimes when you're on a course, you land under a tree, you have no opportunity to push it in because you don't have the ceiling to carry it, so you have to spin it nose up, and that's one advantage. Another advantage is when you're on your one knee, it's easier to spin from one knee or straddle than it is to push because you don't have to use your legs as much. So it's another advantage of spin putting. So let's talk about the disadvantages of spin putting. The disadvantages of spin putting is that you'll find yourself three-putting a lot, blowing by the basket, and then having to make 20, 22-footers consistently to save your pars or bogeys. That's not something you want to find yourself doing if you want to become a consistent golfer.
David Feldberg has been a touring disc golfer for the past 5 years. He spoke to us from his home in Portland. Next week, he'll tell us more about push putting. In the big picture this week, a discussion with PDGA Executive Director Brian Honegger. This is the guy who, for the past 7 years, has kept this organization running smoothly from the home office in Toronto, Ontario. We sat down and talked with Mr. Honegger about, from his perspective, where the organization has been and where the heck is it going.
Brian Honegger, thanks for taking time out of your very busy day and spending some time with PDGA Radio.
My pleasure, Brian.
So, for there's a lot of disc golfers who have probably never met you, so give us a little idea of your background in the sport and how you came to work for the PDGA.
Sure. I played a lot of frisbee in the mid-1970s when I was, 15 to 20 years old. I was introduced to disc golf when my friends took me to the Toronto Island course in 1982. I didn't play too much for a few years then because I was in university, but I bought my first disc at the opening of the Vancouver course in 1985 and started hearing about the PDGA, and I joined them at an event on the Toronto Island in 1987.
And that would put you at what for your PDGA number?
Just over 4,000, 4,022 joining in mid-1987.
You have a very enviable number. So how did that lead you to actually working for the PDGA?
Well, I worked from 1985 to 1997, I worked in international humanitarian assistance, running projects in Africa, and then working out of the Canada office for the same organization. And that was a non-profit, and it gradually, as it became bigger, it became a little more bureaucratic. And eventually, some of the thrill had worn off, and I was looking to do something else, and sports management was what I was interested in as a disc golfer, and with a background in non-profit sector management, the opportunity to become the administrator of the PDGA in 1997 was an enticing one.
So let's do a little compare and contrast. What are the goals of the PDGA today, and how have those goals evolved from when you joined the association 7 years ago?
Well, I would say that several of our fundamental goals remain the same. I mean, these are the lofty things like promotion of the emerging sport of disc golf, organizing competitive disc golf, which is, you know, a key element of the PDGA, the PDGA Tour, and the growth and evolution of the PDGA as an institution, its own gradual development and maturity. Those would be some of the goals. In terms of how they've changed over the years, I mean, you know, one of the fundamental goals is to increase media exposure and to woo sponsors alongside of that, and that goal remains also very much in place. And while we've had some small victories, we haven't had that large ongoing victory that puts us into the mainstream and into the living rooms of middle America.
Well, we may not be there quite yet, but you know, there are victories, there are successes. So in your mind, over the past 5-7 years, what's the biggest success story for the PDGA?
Well, I think that our ability to deliver an ever-growing tour to an ever-growing membership year after year with more features such as the ratings, the National Tour Series events, the United States Championship Series of major events, the many new features at the PDGA website, the Marshals program. Those are some examples of the evolution of the tour and our ability to deliver this massive entity relying on only two staff people and on a core group of driven volunteers. That I think is really the PDGA's biggest success.
I'm assuming you don't have numbers right in front of you, but give us a general idea of the growth as far as the membership, as far as the number of courses, and some of the other factors.
Well, I've got comparing 1997 to 2003 and the current calendar year 2004. 7 years ago in 97, there were just over 4,200 current members. This year in 2004, there'll be probably in the high 8,000. So that's a straight 100% doubling of membership in 7 years. The number of tournaments in 1997 was 267, and this year it will be between 525 and 550. The number of people playing in those events is something else that's roughly doubled, from a little over 20,000 total participants to a little over 40,000 participants. The Tour Pro Purse has doubled from 450,000 in 97 to over 1.2 million this year. That's closer to tripling than doubling. The number of courses in the ground, 1997, there were roughly 750, and at the end of 2003, there were slightly over 1,500 listed in the course directory. So it all talks about the sport matching its growth through its first 21-odd years, 1976 to 1997, matching that growth in the last 7 years from 98 to 2004.
When I talk to members and other disc golfers, You know, they all want great things. They want us back on television, and they want to see us in the magazines and all that. You know, not everyone can make those sort of things happen. So let's talk about the guy at the local course. He wants to help the sport grow. What do you recommend? What are some of your ideas for that person to help the PDGA and the sport grow?
Well, I think you've got to, you know, the winning formula is that which many people are doing and have done for the past 25 years. Promote the sport in a positive light. Get courses. Get your parks department looking at building a course. Start a disc golf club. Once you've got your course, run a PDGA event. Run some local events that get the local businesses excited. I think in teaching other people to play, especially the younger players and the lady players, so that we have a higher portion of those sectors of society reflected in our game, which is still pretty male-dominated at more than 90% of PDGA event participants. And we need more kids and we need more women. They will help us make this the sport of the future.
And how do we encourage more kids and more women?
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of the where is the sport going, programs such as EDGE, the Educational Disc Golf Experience, and the Matching Baskets program, now run by the Disc Golf Foundation, those are sort of the bottom-on-up activities that are really starting to happen within the community, and that over time will make the difference in terms of sustainable growth of the sport.
Brian, one last question. Let me ask you to kind of look into your crystal ball here. A lot of great things are happening right now. The National Disc Golf Center and the office will be moving from Toronto down to Georgia. You've been here a long time. For 7 years, you've had your thumb right on the pulse of this sport. So looking up the road, where do you see the sport going?
Well, I think, honestly, disc golf, for those of us who are involved in it, is a fabulous game. We're the fanatics. It's not for everyone, especially in this day and age when here in North America, there's a million different things we could choose to do with our spare time and our weekends. But I honestly see disc golf continuing its steady growth in the range of 10 to 15% per annum. I think we're not far away from reaching that critical mass point when not only do we chase sponsors in the media, but they start chasing after us as well. I mean, there's a strong element about they're going to come to us when they're ready for us and they think that we're ready for them, and in as much as they're going to come to us by us tracking them down and making them the sales pitch. I think that some of the other things you're going to see in terms of the evolution of disc golf and the PDGA, in terms of television and the sponsors, I'll tell you that we do have a pie just going in the oven right now. We have a company that is involved in the production of major league sports in North America, notably NBA productions, who is going to try and sell PDGA and the PDGA Tour and our leading events to major networks. I'm not going to tell you more about that because we need it to happen, seeing as believing, before I raise people's expectations once again higher than maybe we should. And I think another thing that you're going to see is you're going to see the continued internationalization of the sport and the PDGA. We're trying to become more involved in Europe and enhance our already strong relationship with Japan and other countries. And players who are looking at our stats, you'll see that we've got more international events sanctioned this year. We've got more international members, more international players getting rated and so on. And I think enhanced international cooperation between Europe, the Far East, and North America is another way in which the PDGA is going to help build the game around the world. I think that another indicator of that is not too far down the road, is a world championships with perhaps less pro players than we have now in North America, i.e. a 288 event capacity model versus a 432, with that event being held in Europe and half the participants being Europeans and half them being North Americans, with some folk from the Far East and Australia and New Zealand as well. Those are some of the ways the sport is growing. I think it's going to take years and years of steady growth is going to get us to where we want to be It's not going to take off and start going by 50 or 60% a year, but we are going to become that critical mass that's going to make us more of a household name. It's going to attract sponsorship from outside of the industry, as it is already starting to do now, and it's going to get us on television in people's living rooms.
Brian Honegger, I want to say publicly that both you and your office cohorts at Lord Gibson are doing a continuously fabulous job for the organization. I know that a lot of people don't really realize that the bulk of the work done for this organization and the home office is done by two people, and you guys really managed to juggle those balls well, and everything always lands where it's supposed to, and for the most part, and I think you guys, again, are doing a fantastic job, and I want to thank you for your time today.
Brian, I think you're doing a great job yourself with this new initiative, PDGA Radio. We certainly couldn't do it without our core volunteers, especially our board of directors now. Some of those people are really skilled professionals in their day lives, and they're putting a lot of their extra time and their family time into making this association better. Thanks to you, and thanks to everybody else who's helping.
Brian Honegger is the PDGA's executive director. He spoke to us from the headquarters in Toronto. As the unofficial summer season begins, the national tour makes its way into the Midwest. This weekend, June 4 through the 6th, it's the Kansas City Wide Open. The tournament director is Rick Rothstein.
Wide Open started in 1983. Ironically, it was my first ever PDGA event. I'd signed up that year and came here. It's passed through many TDs. I got to do it in 1993. Ace Mason and C.D. Steiner had done it for years and years before I got there. Ed Gonzalez did it for a year. Dan Cashin did it for a year. Jack Lowe did the AM side last year, and now I'm back on both sides this year. And it's been a super tour and now a national tour for probably the last 8 or 9 years.
And who has won this event in the past couple of years?
Our defending champions are Cameron Todd, who is back to defend. Ruth Steele won the women's last year. She will not be able to make it. And Joel Kelly won Masters last year.
And if I'm coming to Kansas City for the first time, what kind of course challenges can I expect?
We have been told that we have three of the best courses in one tournament that exists out there. Waterworks is completely scenic, hilly. It's going to be fairly long, but fair. Swope is a classic course, gentle, rolling hills. There's been some improvements, some expansions on it in the last few years, and it will play 6,700 feet. And Rosedale, we're going to have some fun with this year. We're not quite maxing it out. There will be four short par threes, but at 7,300 feet and a lot of two-shot holes, I don't expect anyone to shoot in the 40s there. It's going to be a lot of golf. It's going to be longish, fair, and long and fair.
Rick Rothstein is the tournament director for this weekend's Kansas City Wide Open in Kansas City, Missouri. He spoke to us from his office in KC. Summer is here, and it's time to test your disc golf skills. Here's a bunch of places you can do just that this weekend, June 5 and 6. In Ohio, it's the Discraft Shoot the Breeze Open, and in Maine, it's the Dragon Championships. The Norway Open going on this weekend in Norway, yet Norway. And in California, it's the Stafford Lake Open, great course there. In Kenosha, it's the Parkside Prairie Open this weekend, and the Farm Life Open going on in Williamson, North Carolina. Plus, the Battlefield Open in Richmond. In Elizabethtown, Kentucky, it's the Flying Freeman Open, and in Rapid City, the Confederacy Classic. Plus, Houston hosting the Moffitt Rat Open. Owl Fest in Irwinna, PA, bunch more. This list is available 24/7 at pdga.com. And finally this week, let's take a look at the leading events for 2004 as of May 24th. Where does your event fall on the list? Well, let's first look at the leading events by field size. In other words, how many players were there. At the top of this list, with a new record and blowing everybody else out of the water, it is the Bowling Green Open Amateur Weekend with 330 players. Terrific job by tournament director Larry Bledsoe and company there. In the second spot, it's the PGA Am World Doubles, 188 participants. And third in this list so far this year, it's the Memorial, the pro event, with 162 players. Now let us look at the leading events by pro purse at this point through the year. A different picture here at the top of the list. It's the Memorial with $27,000 and change, followed by the Mattress Cup, $25,600. And in the third spot so far this year is the Bell South Open, $21,900. And that is the Disc Golf News for the week of May 31st for the PDGA. I'm Brian Sullivan. Please visit our sponsors, Discovering the World. You can discover them at dtworld.com. And if you have any thoughts, story ideas, whatever you got, send them along to PDGA Radio at pdga.com. Until next time, keep them in the fairways.